This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete. Not in a cage, not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
Top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. The Brian Kilmeade Show comes your way. A lot of breaking news happening. Mark Thiessen standing by. We're also going to go to one of the fastest growing, most encouraging, intriguing sports out there is Real American Freestyle Wrestling, and it's on Fox Nation. Their event 2 at Penn State is coming up this weekend. We're going to have the founders on with us, so you're going to hear that. If you saw week 1, it was fantastic. You know, it's the beginning of something really big. Mark Thiessen standing by, and just a quick reminder about the Patriot Awards coming up on November 6th on Thursday. Get to the Tillis Center at LIU, foxnation.com/Patriot Awards. And before we get to the big three, quick note, there's a huge betting scandal in the NBA that is blowing up in real time, just broke, maybe prematurely, about an hour ago. And one of the main guys, Terry Rozier of Miami, formerly of Charlotte, represented by a good friend of our show, Jim Trusty. So, and they think the bottom line is, this could be huge. I knew it. The minute you legalize gambling, we just knew this was going to be inevitable. Before it was legal, betting was always a fear. Hence Pete Rose. Now think about it. Big three.
Number three.
We canceled the meeting with President Putin. It didn't feel right to me. It didn't feel like we were going to get to the place we have to get, so I canceled it. But we'll do it in the future.
Here we go. Ukraine and Venezuela dominate the president's foreign policy. We examine the risks and the reward.
Number two.
They're not Nazis. They're abducting people from their homes and their schools and their jobs, and they know what they're doing is wrong, and they don't give a because they're heartless monsters.
Unbelievable. That, by the way, is a grammar school teacher. ICE under attack. New York, Chicago, Portland, Dems doubling down on anti-ICE app. Yeah, an anti-ICE app generated by Democrats, created by them. This has got to stop.
Number one.
What you have is the federal government looking to brutalize street vendors in New York City as a means by which to intimidate New Yorkers.
What a twisted way to interpret a crackdown on illegal immigrants selling stolen property. You believe this, Zohran Mamdani? And by the way, Cuomo and Sliwa weren't much better on this. Major mayoral debate last night. I have the latest, because if Mamdani wins, he's up by about 15 in most polls. It's going to be the beginning of a whole bunch of socialists popping up on every major city in the country. You just watch me. Mark Thiessen, you know him, Fox News contributor, Washington Post columnist, speechwriter for Bush. He's got a huge resume. Mark, first off, on your, did you have a chance to absorb or review any of the mayoral debate last night?
So, yeah, well, first of all, banner morning for me today, because I've been on TV with you this morning, and now I'm on with radio, and that means I've been dressed since 6 a.m.
So normally it's noon.
You've jump-started my morning, man.
But, yeah, I want to get to what we talked about and expand on what we talked about with Ukraine in a moment. But just curious, I think Mamdani, win or lose, and it looks like he's going to win. This is not the end of him. I mean, that Socialist Party is going to spread throughout the Democrats and throughout the country.
Well, first of all, it's terrible for, I think you're right, and I think Curtis Sliwa should not be in the race, because there's no chance, he has zero chance of winning, and he's splitting the anti-Mamdani vote. And Mamdani has, you know, like 43-46%, so he's going to win with a plurality. You know, I have a column this week in the Post. I mentioned this on the show last week. It reminds me of the race between David Duke and Edwin Edwards in 1991 for the Louisiana governor. And David Duke was a Klansman, a neo-Nazi, and Duke had been indicted on corruption charges. And they said, vote for the crook. It's important. In this race, vote for the sleazeball.
Yeah.
You know, Cuomo, it's important. He was about to be impeached, and he was caught up in a sexual harassment scandal, and he put 9,000 elderly people with COVID into nursing homes. A terrible, terrible person who should never be in Gracie Mansion, except for Zora Mandami. You know, except for a communist, that would be worse than Mayor Cuomo. So I just don't understand what Curtis Sliwa was doing.
Right. A couple of things. First off, what I'm seeing with ICE in Portland, Chicago, and now New York is so sickening to me. People are saying that they're the Gestapo. You're watching them being protested. Now the Democrats have an app that's out there that's going to predict where ICE will tell everybody where ICE is going to be going next, which to me is a criminal offense. I mean, that's you're interfering with law enforcement and putting their agents' life in danger. And so in New York on Canal Street is famous for knockoff handbags and clothing. But now it's fenced by illegal immigrants, nine of which don't belong here. The arrests come down, ICE comes down, and the people of New York City come after the ICE agents. So here's what Mandami says that he would do. Cut one.
I think that is a failure on behalf of the federal government. What you have is the federal government looking to brutalize street vendors in New York City as a means by which to intimidate New Yorkers. And we know that rule of law is something that matters very little to Donald Trump, but it matters a lot to us here in New York City. And I think what we continue to see is a use of the justification of a concern around crime, when if it was in fact crime, then Donald Trump would be sending these same agents to the 8 out of 10 states that are run by Republicans that have the highest rates of crime in this country.
Is this guy an idiot? Illegal immigrants selling stolen goods. And they think that we're cracking down on street vendors.
Yeah, communist word salad. I mean, you know, first of all, you're right. There's a problem with rule of law in Washington because Joe Biden let in 12 million people into the country illegally, which is a crime.
Yeah.
And 9 in 10. This is the insanity of the Democratic Party right now. 9 in 10 Americans support deporting every single illegal alien who has a criminal record. Right. So, and that's what ICE has been focusing on. And the Democrats are siding with the illegal migrants. They have learned nothing. Donald Trump won two elections on the issue of illegal immigration, and they're, you know, they want to let J.D. Vance do the same thing in 4 years' time. They just are not learning their lessons at all. And this is why Mamdani's election, if it happens, is a horrible thing for New York. It's the best thing that ever happened for the Republican Party, because what's going to happen is that the Democrats are going to decide this is the wave of the future. We need more of these young, energetic leftists who are energizing the Republican Party. And the problem is he's going to beat a disgraced former governor in the bluest state, in the bluest city in the country, with a plurality. You can't win Georgia that way. You can't win Michigan that way. You can't win Arizona that way. That's not going to work in blue states. And so they're going to learn the wrong lesson. And second of all, a bunch of people are going to leave New York. He thinks he's going to raise taxes on wealthy people and have them pay for all this, all of his socialism. No, they're going to move to Palm Beach. They're going to move to Florida. And guess what happens? They're going to take their congressional seats and their electoral votes with them. After the 2030 census, the blue wall is dead. It's gone. There's going to be such a shift of electoral votes and congressional seats to the red states, mm-hmm. that they're never going to be able to win the presidency with the blue, unless they win the blue wall plus some other swing states.
So let's switch over to Ukraine. Yesterday, the president announced additional sanctions on Russia, and on the Rosneft and Lukoil, estimated to account for half of all Russia's oil production. You mentioned to me and got confirmed, I guess, that India now we'll stop buying Russian oil. I assume we're going to step up and fulfill the need that they have at more market prices. But we're also allowing the Storm Shadow, green-lighted, that is from Germany, that has American parts in it. So we've been holding them back. That's a long-distance rocket that will be – it's shorter than the Tomahawk, but it's longer distance. And they're going to aim it at energy, any energy assets they have inside Russia. But the bigger story is the Tomahawks. The president said – yeah. When it comes to the Tomahawks, this, cut 23.
The problem with the Tomahawk that a lot of people don't know, it'll take a minimum of 6 months, usually a year, to learn how to use them. They're highly complex. So the only way a Tomahawk is going to be shot is if we shot it, and we're not going to do that. But there is a tremendous learning curve with a Tomahawk. It's a very powerful weapon, very accurate weapon, and maybe that's what makes it so complex. But it will take a year. It takes a year of intense training to learn how to use it. And we know how to use it, and we're not going to be teaching other people.
You found out something different.
Yeah. So first of all, on the missiles that we're firing, that they're allowing to fire right now, the Storm Shadows are sort of like ATACMS. They're medium range missiles. The Storm Shadow is the British version of the American ATACMS. What we need to get are German Taurus missiles, which are their version of a Tomahawk, and American Tomahawks into the hands of the Ukrainians, because they can fly much further into Russia. And the main base that they're using to attack Ukraine is there's a drone factory in Tatarstan, which is out of range of the ATACMS and the Storm Shadows. If the Ukrainians can destroy that base, that will decimate Russia's ability to attack Ukraine where they're building these Iranian drones. I talked to Jack Keane about this, and what Jack says is that that's not true, that it takes 6 months. President is being given bad information. You can train them in six weeks. And there's different types of Tomahawks. What we're talking about are land-based Tomahawks, which are called, the Army calls them Typhoons. And they can be trained to do that in 6 weeks, and they can fire them from the ground in Ukraine and hit those targets. So, you know, I think that's something that's very doable. And I just, Donald Trump needs to be careful not to let himself be boxed in by people in the Pentagon who don't want to do this stuff. This is the same excuse that they gave when Joe Biden didn't want to give the Ukrainians F-16s. Oh, it'll take too long to train them. Biden didn't want to give them M1 Abrams tanks. Too long to train how to use them. ATACMS was the same. Every weapon system that Biden ended up giving them in the long run, he said, oh, it'll take too long to train them. It's not going to take them too long to train them. We can do it very quickly.
All right, absolutely. So let's fast forward to Venezuela. The president's picking up pressure. They blew up another one of those drug boats. They said they're going to be hitting Venezuela and land. This hemisphere is extremely important to the president, and it should be, but it hasn't been to past presidents, and I don't know why. What do you think about the president's approach?
100% the right thing to do. Look, as he said, every one of those boats, I'm saving, you know, 25,000 American lives, 30,000 American lives, because that's how much fentanyl, how many people will be killed by the fentanyl in there. And look, here's what we need to realize about Venezuela. Venezuela, it's a socialist regime, but it's run by narco-capitalists. Everybody in the Venezuelan regime is in the drug business. That's how they're funded. That's why they're billionaires. You don't get rich being the president of Venezuela. You get rich being running a drug cartel. And they're knee-deep into narco-capitalism. And so all these drug boats that are being destroyed, the money funnel goes to the Venezuelan regime. And so you in the end, if you want to end the drug trade going in from Venezuela into the United States, you have to end the regime, because the narco traffickers are tied to the leadership of Venezuela. And unless you change the leadership of Venezuela, there's never going to change.
So how do you do that in a way? Put it this way. When people say we want to pick the leaders of Venezuela, we're not looking to do that. There is a leader that picked, that won an election, and she won with 70% of the vote. And she is right now in exile because she's afraid of if she shows up anywhere, she's going to be killed. So the people of Venezuela have spoken. They just won't. This guy won't let the rightful leader, who just won the Nobel Peace Prize, take the job.
No, that's exactly right. They've had multiple. He's lost now two elections and still stayed in power. So you know, this is an illegitimate government. And we used to be very good at changing governments in Central America.
Yeah.
And then President Trump has authorized the CIA to carry out covert operations in Venezuela. We don't know what those are, because by definition they're covert, so we don't know exactly what they're doing. But this is something we used to do on a routine basis. And in this case, we're replacing an illegitimate government with one that we'd be helping government that was elected by the Venezuelan people gain power. So it would solve both problems.
Yes, and we got to get China, Iran, and Russia out of our hemisphere, and we got to do it the hard way, it looks like. Here's what Tulsi Gabbard said. Cut 31.
This is happening on multiple fronts. I can speak to a couple of them. It's just recognizing the the really drastic reduction of drug trafficking across our borders, for example. We've seen the trafficking of fentanyl across our borders reduce drastically. You're seeing these cartels and these narco traffickers afraid because for the first time, they're actually seeing in President Trump someone who means what he says, that he's going to stop them from putting the American people's lives at risk.
So he's taking action, and we're already seeing it through the so they can't go through the code, they can't go through the water, and they can't go through the border. So we're seeing how they're trying to get here. The president says to really stop it, we got to get in there. We hear mostly Venezuela is cocaine, that fentanyl really comes from China to Mexico, but I'm looking to stop it all.
100%. And look, when you blow up seven or eight of these boats, suddenly they stop going. Would you sign up to be the captain in one of these boats today? I wouldn't.
Yeah. I'd go back on ZipRecruiter and click a different box.
Exactly. No, I think I would look for a different option than getting on one of those boats, because you're pretty likely to end up at the bottom of the Pacific or Caribbean Sea if you do.
And Marco Rubio leading the strategy there, along with Pete Hegseth. Mark, thanks so much.
Take care.
All right. And Marco wrote a column just saying vote for Cuomo. It's important. And he never probably thought he'd ever write that in his life. Coming up next, we're going to explore what's going on with the NBA gambling scandal. It looks to be huge. We're just learning of it. Maybe it leaked out a little early. Arrests already today. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The meme that he had where he was flying with the crown and the, spewing excrement all over the people down below.
The country, America.
Yeah, China. Would Lincoln have done that? This is a song I wrote called Crazy World, which is how I cope. This crazy world's gone crazy. Who am I to judge? It's nice to know in a world full of hate, there's someone out there still making love.
So it's Jeff Daniels from Dumb and Dumber, right?
Yes, correct.
And Jeff Daniels, who is obviously one of these people like not Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, who is just can't get over that Trump's president. So
at least he's got his guitar to make himself feel a little bit better.
Right. And MSNBC to hear his stuff. I mean, yeah. Just deranged.
Do you want to come on with your guitar? Absolutely.
So who's the morning show host? Oprah's best friend.
Oh, Gayle King.
So Gayle King puts a picture of her and Jesse in first class on an airplane. Do you believe the outrage that she felt and the blowback?
Oh, I know, on Blue Sky, people are like, how dare you?
You're legitimizing him and they're liars.
Instead of being refreshing, oh, good, we're all people. We all are just like, can have nice conversations with one another. We don't need to like label everyone by their politics the first, as soon as we meet them.
I mean, I think Fox and Friends is beating their show in about 18 markets, which is unbelievable because we don't repeat. So for the West Coast, they're getting Bill Hemmer, unless they're getting up at 3 a.m. So even without repeating, we're beating them. So she must realize, Gayle King, she's not going to get this money anymore, that things got to change. They have a news channel that just streams, that still no one watches. Because I think a lot of it has to do with the biasness. And then Barry Weiss comes in to straighten them out, so to speak. not a conservative, and she's getting all types of blowback.
She has bodyguards, I saw, like, in the post.
Six bodyguards or something.
Crazy, I know.
And she went up to 60 Minutes because, you know, the perception of you guys is that you're biased. And everyone was insulted. They said you could hear a pin drop. Really? Are you news people? Do you not understand how you're being perceived? I guess they're not.
Also, how they want to label Barry as this, like, extreme conservative, which isn't the case either.
I don't think she is at all. Just listen to the Free Press. You're a news person. Be curious. Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety, built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. And just to give you an idea of what's going on in the NBA, this guy, Terry Rozier, the Miami Heat, formerly of the Hornets, being investigated since 2023. Why? Gambling allegations. Suddenly money went down on just for, you can bet on individual players. And I know if you're like me, I don't bet a lot, but I know you can. So they bet on a guy that's not a superstar, Terry Rozier, on points, but he only played 10 minutes in this game, and they end up seeing all the money go down on him, something like $15,000 going down in 45 minutes on him, and it alerted people to an innocuous game, which was the Hornets against the Pelicans in New Orleans. No one really cares unless, of course, you're betting. So they get $13,759. They do an investigation of him. He played only 10 minutes. Then they start watching him a little closer. And then they see him, finally arrest him yesterday in Orlando. The FBI did. They've been looking at him. So there's going to be a press conference in 25 minutes, at which point the FBI is going to be there. Homeland Security is going to be there. Remember yesterday, the day before, the commissioner of the NBA says, I want tighter regulations when it comes to betting. Now we know. James Trusty, a good friend of our show's, former Trump attorney, has been representing Terry Rozier. He makes over $10 million a year. Why he would need to throw a game? There's a whole bunch of footage online of him throwing into traffic, giving the ball away, airballing shots on games that were suspicious to begin with. So he's been arrested. Word is he was arrested. And by the way, he's going to be charged in the Eastern District of New York. And at the press conference, it's going to be in New York. Jessica Tisch will be at the press conference. So here we go. Joining us now to discuss anything but this, where there's no betting problems, is Chad Bronstein, co-founder and CEO of Real American Freestyle, and Izzy Martinez, co-founder as well, who's really handling a lot of the wrestlers and the matchups. And we saw a great debut. He is also part of Real American Freestyle. One of the partners, sadly, Hulk Hogan, has passed away. But now we're in event number two. It's going to be live from Penn State. It'll be this Saturday at 7 o'clock, exclusively on Fox Nation. And by the way, you can see the first one now. It's archived. But you're going to see the second one beginning at 7 o'clock Eastern time. Guys, welcome.
Thanks for having us again, Brian.
All right, Chad, let's start with you. I love the first one. You gave out belt to your anointed champions. How do you build on that?
I mean, at the end of the day, we have now actually some rematches for the belts, but we're creating the storylines, right, with the consistency of wrestlers. And Penn State, obviously, is the biggest area for wrestling, right? So we're excited about the matchups. And we actually brought in, with Izzy's help, we brought in a few foreigners on this card as well. So it's evolving the matchups and the momentum that we have after the first event. Now it's continuing to bring in the audiences to watch And get excited about what they're going to see.
So, Izzy, we see people with MMA backgrounds, but originally wrestlers, so wrestling champ. Wrestlers had to find something else to do, you know, because very few can make a living after the college days and Olympic days if you don't qualify. So how does that play into what you did? And are you dipping into Russia and other and Iran, places that love, you know, have great histories of wrestling?
Well, you know, the goal as a young wrestler was always to kind of be a professional athlete, but there was never that avenue for us. So we created the avenue for all athletes that were wrestlers to be pro athletes in the sport. And now they don't have to necessarily only do UFC or certain other events. Now they can do both. But most importantly, they have an option to be a pro athlete with Real American Freestyle. And of course, we're going all over the world. We want to take wrestling to the highest level worldwide.
And Brian, we're talking to a lot of the international areas right now and bringing wrestlers from those. And we're going to probably launch, we are going to launch Real International Freestyle. So we'll have events in different countries as well.
So will they be all competing for one belt in one weight class?
Yes.
Well, we have every man's weight class and every woman's weight class. So there's 8 men's champions and 4 women's champions. So we're everyone's battling for those titles at specific weight classes.
So, Chad, give me an idea, and Izzy, give me an idea of some of the matchups to look forward to.
I think you're going to – a really exciting matchup is Kyle Dake's matchup. You saw him on the first card. He took the title. He's a 4-time NCAA champion, 2-time bronze medalist. His matchup is going to be really awesome. He's wrestling a guy from Russia who has had a great career on the world level as well.
All right. So how many matches will we see?
You're going to see 10 matches. 10 matches featuring Olympic champion, the greatest woman wrestler of all time, Helen Maroulis, is taking on multiple world-time medalists, Samantha Stewart from Canada. So there'll be 10 matches and 3 title bouts.
And so what did you learn from the first one?
What we learned from the first one is, like, I think, and Brian, I always thank you on your show because you were an early supporter of our league. So I always like
Absolutely.
To say thank you.
Thank you.
I also like to thank, I always say thanks to Fox, because what we learned is when we did Fox and Friends with you and Hulk and Izzy and Eric on that first show, everybody in the wrestling community saw what we were doing and they got really excited about it. So we learned from the first show is this, you know, the wrestlers never got to be on the big stage. So they were very excited and appreciative of this. Going to the second show, we're seeing more of their personalities come out, right? And that's the key, is that we need to be able to bring in mainstream audiences. And you said something about the UFC and MMA. A lot of these guys have fought in the UFC. A lot of them fought in PFL. A lot of them fought in Bellator. So they went and did that because they had nowhere else to go. So now they can do both, which allows them to make money on both stages.
So what about Penn State as a venue? They have a rich history. You get a lot of great wrestlers out of there.
It's a great venue. We're doing it at Bryce Jordan Center. I think they've won, 10 out of the last 12 NCAA championships. So it's a extremely good venue. And Pennsylvania as a market is a very strong wrestling market in the youth.
Izzy, how do you tap into the international game?
Well, I think we just keep doing what we're doing. We keep plugging along, putting on great shows, and everyone wants to come. I mean, our inbox is flooded with the top wrestlers around the world, and we just got to keep executing, and we're pretty pumped about it.
Also, Brian, Izzy is being humble, but he also coaches too. He just had 2 place winners in the Worlds, and also coaches a silver medalist, Kennedy Blades, who's going to be wrestling in Chicago. So Izzy's constantly on the international tour. And when he was in Croatia, everyone was coming up to him and saying, love what you guys are doing for the sport and RAF. We want to be a part of it.
So how do you tap into the young kids who are wrestling now, the 9th graders, the 11th graders in the area, as you travel the country from event to event? What have you done to tap the youth and let them know this is an opportunity for you waiting?
Yeah, I mean, Izzy has one of the top clubs in the United States, but at the same time, we've been calling all the clubs. We've been working with them. You know, wrestling is a very much relationship sport. You also have to show that you care. So we're talking to all the youth communities. When my son's 9 years old, we go to tournaments in Florida, he wears an RAF jersey, or Izzy wears a Real American Freestyle shirt. Everyone is like, I love what you guys are doing. Where do we get that gear? How do we support you guys? So people, this needs to work for the sport. It's the only thing, it's the only pro stage you could actually wrestle on in.
So here we go. We're set for this Saturday at 7:00. What's down the pike?
Chicago, November 29th, is a big event that we launched yesterday, and we're super excited for that event, and that's next.
And it's going to be a huge one, Brian. We'll announce on Monday a main event but it will be a main event that people know both these names. Very profile.
So I know the one thing with the UFC, the weighing in has become like a spectacle. And you guys were the original. I mean, wrestling is where you always weigh in. You have to adjust to 3 days, days before. Have you thought about making the weigh in a spectacle?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're working on. We're just improving every aspect of this, and the weigh-in should be pretty fun. And and then the press conference also the following day.
So Muggsy against Henschel, Carr against Retta, Green against, I imagine this is a Russian, Salkovatsa, the 165-pounder. What is that matchup?
Well, so Kozlov, he just got third in the world championship. So he's fresh off a bronze medal in the world championship. And James Green's a multiple-time world medalist and world champion. So there's going to be fireworks pretty early.
So in the open division, Muggsy against Henschel. What weight is that?
It's just an open matchup. So they're both. Kaden was a great wrestler, but he's one of the bigger influencers in the space. And then Muggsy built his whole career off of being a wrestling influencer. He's got over 1 million followers, and everyone wanted to see that matchup. They already had a matchup before, so it's a really fun matchup. Both incredible voices for the space, and really, building because of their influence.
And we're also, Brian, giving a belt away at 165 pounds with David Carr, fresh off of fifth place at the World Championships, going against two-time Olympian from Egypt, Amir Retta. So that's going to be a burner, but we're pretty excited to announce the championship belt at 165 pounds this weekend.
So, Chad, tell me your approach. You have champions now, right? Now, what if those champions don't want to be on that card in 2 weeks? I mean, do they get a say in when they have to defend their belt?
So, we've dealt with a little bit of drama in the behind the scenes, but a good example would be Kyle Dake. He's an unbelievable supporter and athlete. We told Kyle, hey Kyle, we want you to defend your belt on the next card. He goes, I'm down. He's like, I want to wrestle every single card, right? Because he's super excited about this. They wrestle on the world on the U.S. tour, right, wherever they go. But this is something that they get to continue to build their brand. So a lot of them want to keep going, right? The wrestlers that are just love wrestling, they want to go as much as they can. And then some, they want to wait a little bit, and that's totally fine. But at the end of the day, it's up to Izzy, myself, and Eric Bischoff and the organization to decide when you're going to defend the title or not.
What's the cadence in college, Izzy? Because, in boxing, you got to give these guys off just for the health reasons. But in wrestling, sometimes you're wrestling once a week, aren't you, in matches?
I mean, in the Big Ten, you're wrestling week back to back, Friday and Sunday, so wrestlers are used to wrestling multiple dual meets a week, multiple tournaments and the weekends. But, we're only one match at a time, one event a month. So it's spaced out enough. Everyone's hungry and everyone wants to compete. So we're really thrilled about that. And the hunger of everyone trying to get on this big production, and they're all in love with it. So we haven't had much pushback of guys not wanting to compete.
What about the international body? Of wrestling.
So we've gotten Izzy and I've gotten a couple of pushbacks from different countries. We'll remain quiet on where, but we get some pushback because people, we're taking wrestlers from the international scene from other leagues. So there has been some pushback, but it's all good because as Brian and Hulk would always say, brother, heat's always good. Right. So it means that we're doing something right.
I hear you. So it's going to be 7 o'clock on Saturday. It's going to be at Penn State. So tickets are available and you can watch it on the stream on Fox Nation. And to get ready for it, you can also watch the first one, their debut, which is also archived. Guys, Chad and Izzy, thanks so much for coming on and previewing the big match on Saturday night.
Brian, I thought you were supposed to be there.
But I'm going to try the best I can to get to Penn State, but we'll see. I got this thing called work that keeps on dragging me back.
Well, hopefully we'll see you.
All right. Chad and Izzy, thanks so much.
We'll see you in Chicago, November 29th. Don't forget to mark that on your calendar.
Right. Just at some point, you got to put me on the card. So
we want you to be a part of it. We're waiting for you.
All right. I'm trying to think what I weighed in. I'll probably wrestle. You have anybody at 165?
Clay Guida.
All right. Just put me down. I'll take him. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Hey, 1-866-408-7669. So if you have any questions about wrestling, if you have any questions about this growing NBA scandal, what your questions are, we'll try to answer them. Also, the President of the United States and multiple stances now really turning up the heat on Russia right after they bombed a kindergarten, killed 6 children. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. It gives me great pleasure to tell you that Simply Safe is now available at 50% off because you're listening to this podcast. So go to simplysafe.com/Brian. Now, why is Simply Safe so perfect? Number one, it's easily put in. Number two, it's unbelievably effective. Number three, they're using AI now to stop the break-in, not just catch the people that are doing it, but to stop them before they infiltrate your life and destroy your personal property. I personally trust these people. This is a game changer. The agents take action while the intruder is still on the outside. They confront the intruder, letting them know they're being watched on camera, and you know they're going to head for the hills because they're going to head right to prison if they don't, and hopefully they still will. There are no long-term contracts. There are no hidden fees. Get this, the U.S. News and World Report, they named them, Simply Safe, the best home security system. There's a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what price can you put on safety? Well, Simply Safe is easy to install. They're always improving the product, and it's affordable. Why can't you be safe? The answer is, of course you can. Go get Simply Safe. Save your 50% by going to simplysafe.com/Brian. Get it.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And all those people across the street that are personally so disappointed. No. We want them to stick around New Jersey to see what real conservative common sense governance is. Well, let me tell you the signs. We're out here.
What were they chanting? Does anyone know?
Couldn't even tell except Free Palestine was all I could make out.
Idiots. Do they even know what's happening in the news? So Jack Chitterolli, well, that's what you got to do. All these politicians, you got to deal with people there down to disrupt and to throw you off. He's pretty experienced, though. He's been in the assembly, big business person. He was with Byron Donalds yesterday. They fully believe they're going to close the gap and win this thing. Keep in mind, 5 of the last 10 gubernatorial elections have gone to Republicans. It is more than possible, especially if they have a vulnerable Democrat. And she is. Mikey Sherrill absolutely is. She also made, I think, raise the bar, too, on herself. Calling this, a lot of people say it's a purple state. I think it's a blue state, but so does she, cut 13.
I let everybody in on a little secret that maybe the pundits don't know. New Jersey is not a red state. New Jersey is not a purple state. New Jersey is a blue state. We win.
If everybody votes for her, every Democrat votes for her, they win. But this is, you know, New Jersey's trending like Pennsylvania's trending. More Democrats are leaving and Republicans are coming or declared or flipping. But those numbers are flipping. That's why they got to get a message besides ICE is bad and trans athletes dressing in the opposite sex's fault from them, how they're born is a good thing. They're still not running from that. And I don't get that at all. They want to talk about abortion. And for the most part, that was in 2024. They thought they'd win on that. I think it affected things in the midterm, 2022. But I don't think it affects anything now. Quick thing on the betting scandal that's growing in the NBA. So we know about Terry Rozier was arrested yesterday at the hotel room. He's been cooperating with the FBI, they say. And the arrest, they say, has just shown maybe that he's directly implicated more than anyone thought. So James Trustee put out a statement, his attorney. He said, "We've represented Terry for over a year. A long time ago, we reached out to prosecutors to tell them we should have an open line for communication. They characterized Terry as a subject, not a target. But at 6 a.m. this morning, they called me to tell me FBI agents were trying to arrest him in a hotel. It's unfortunate that instead of allowing him to self-surrender, they opted for a photo op. They wanted the misplaced glory of embarrassing a professional athlete with a perp walk." The other thing is Chauncey Billups is involved, and he's on something different. He was arrested, too. Who is he? He's a 19-year veteran of the league. He's in the Hall of Fame. He won a championship with Detroit. But of late, he's been coaching the Portland Trailblazers. So the head coach of the Portland Trailblazers was arrested and federally charged with, it seems to be part of a huge, you know, card game. It seems unrelated to anything to do with the NBA, which is good for the league. But and arresting him the same day maybe muddies the waters and confuses things. But for the most part, we're trying to find out who else is involved. Reportedly, the Terry Rozier, according to reports, was cooperating over the last year or so. So maybe saying why money went on him against the Pelicans game, why he missed so many shots, seems to throw into the wrong team at very convenient times. What was the bet then? And who else is involved? But when you legalize betting, when it went from just Atlantic City and Las Vegas to everywhere, and now you have all these betting shows and DraftKings so sponsoring every major sporting league and sporting event. You see it everywhere. Biggest names in sports advertising it, DraftKings and their competitors. There's a huge push to gamble. And for athletes, it's natural. I like to put something on the line. I want the ball in my hands in crunch time. How about this? When the money, I like the money in my hands. I want the stakes to be high. I think I can come through. Then you factor in the fact that if you're an NBA player and you're actually on the court, let alone being a player, not only do you know basketball, you know the inside information. You know the way the unrest is with the coach. You know how people play on the road. You know certain players that will wilt under pressure at the Boston Garden or Madison Square Garden. And that's where you put money in. That's what people fear is going to happen with athletes in sports. And that's what seems to have happened again in the NBA. And word is, this thing is going to get a lot bigger.
We all love a legendary comeback. And Degree Original Cool Rush is back and better than ever. Cool Rush isn't just a scent. It's a movement, a fan favorite that delivers bold, fresh vibes and all-day sweat protection. Whether you have a man that spends hours in the gym, heads into the office early, or is just trying to stay fresh on a long day, Cool Rush has their back. Head to your local Walmart or Target and grab Degree Cool Rush, the fan favorite scent from the world's number one antiperspirant brand.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, the Brian Kilmeade Show coming to you. Josh Krasshour at the bottom of the hour. He is going to be talking about the off-year elections as well as the latest approach to get the government open again. We're coming very close to the all-time record of a government shutdown. And average everyday people living paycheck to paycheck are more than beginning to pay the price. Larry Kudlow is standing by, host of Kudlow at 4 o'clock Eastern time today on FBN. But before, and I just got to tell you, too, we're just watching this unfold before our eyes, this NBA scandal, 29 arrested, including Terry Rozier, represented by our own Jim Trusty, who's been on the channel a lot. He was arrested this morning at 6 o'clock. Chauncey Billups, unrelated gambling charges over in Portland. But this is really going to blow up in the NBA in particular. And I just knew when you legalize gambling, I guess in 39 states now, you knew some of this stuff would be just too tempting to avoid. And you're not supposed to bet on your own sport, let alone your own team. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We canceled the meeting with President Putin. It didn't feel right to me. It didn't feel like we were going to get to the place we have to get, so I canceled it. But we'll do it in the future.
But there's sanctions in its wake. Ukraine and Venezuela dominate the president's foreign policy. We examine the risk and the reward.
Number two.
They're not Nazis. They're abducting people from their homes and their schools and their jobs, and they know what they're doing is wrong, and they don't give a because they're heartless monsters.
Yes, that lunatic is a typical protester that you see in Chicago, Portland, and now New York City. ICE, those are the people who are heartless monsters. They're one of us. They're under attack. In those cities I mentioned, the Dems are doubling down on their anti-ICE rhetoric with putting together an app to track them. Created by the Democrats, this has got to stop.
Number one.
What you have is the federal government looking to brutalize street vendors in New York City as a means by which to intimidate New Yorkers.
So, Zohran Mamdani. ICE, but Zohran Mamdani, by the way, had a major debate last night. He was sweating his way right through it. He did absolutely terrible, could not defend his policies. Is it enough to make him lose? What would it mean if he does win? Larry Kudlow joins us now, host of Kudlow on FBN. Larry, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Larry, what's the business community in New York City worry most about when it comes to Mamdani?
I think taxes. I'm just going to guess taxes because they're already taxed to death. Here's an example. In New York, city and state, New York City, you pay a 14.8% tax rate, and that's on your individual income. So if you live in Miami, you know what you pay? Zero.
Right.
If you live in Dallas, Texas, you know what you pay? Zero. So Mondami wants to raise them a couple more points. That would bring it up to 16.8%. He also wants to raise the corporate tax, which is already outrageous. New York and New Jersey have the highest in the country, New York and New Jersey. By the way, Jack Cicciarelli in New Jersey could win that race for governor of the Republican. But I think it's that. I mean, he has a lot of other things, you know, police, safety, crime. He's very weak on that. But I think the tax issue for businesses, and then, of course, all this baloney about grocery stores, you know, city-run grocery stores. But I think the tax issue would be the biggest killer because New York is not competitive, Brian.
I hear you. And the other thing he wants to do is minimum wage. He wants to double it. Listen to it. Andrew Cuomo put it up to 15. Zohran Mamdani wants it at 30. Listen to this. Cut six.
Good point.
I half agree with Curtis. There is, Zohran does have socialist theory colliding with practical reality. I went through this. We raised the minimum wage to the highest in the United States of America. New York set the bar. We set it at $15. Every other state said, that's crazy when we did it. People in the state said that was crazy when we did it. But it was calibrated. It was doable. We phased it in different parts of the state. We phased it in with small businesses. We gave them assistance. Because if you raise it too high, and I believe 30 is too high, I would raise it to 20.
So even raise it to 20, these people, you can tell they never ran a business, Larry.
Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, you're right. The minimum wage is a good point. It would blow up all kinds of, you know, relatively small business. But Cuomo's wrong, too. I mean, we shouldn't have it at 20. We shouldn't have had it at 15, for heaven's sakes. And the only guy that really shined on taxes and minimum wage was Curtis Sliwa, who had a very good night. I was just looking at the New York Post. Even the, let's see, this guy Kurtzman, who's kind of a liberal, but he gave Cuomo A to A plus, but he also had great things to say about Curtis Sliwa, who had an A. I think the loser last night was Mondami, didn't you?
Absolutely. And by the way, he looked like he was sweating it. He looked like he knows he was losing. He looks like he knows he couldn't defend his policies. But let's talk about the country, Larry, if we can. We know that Scott Bessent's going to be going along with the president overseas. There's going to be a meeting next Friday with President Xi. We know that we were going to the technical phase, I thought, with our trade deal with China. And then they just came out and started denying us rare earth sales. I mean, we're paying for it while not buying our soybeans and our agricultural products. So your thought about where we're heading with this?
Well, I interviewed Scott yesterday. We had a very good interview where he announced the Russian oil sanctions, by the way. But on China, he was talking very, very tough. I mean, look, they thought they had a deal at the last meeting, which I think is in Madrid, Spain, a couple weeks ago. And then China comes out with this global attack on rare earth export controls, right? So that was not part of the deal. So President Trump comes in, slaps a tariff surcharge of 100%, which is where we are. The two of them are going to meet. But Bessent's going to be meeting with Chinese negotiators today. He flew back yesterday into Malaysia. He's talking tough. He's saying that the U.S. will apply export controls. This is Scott Bessent, Treasury man, on chips, on jet planes, on all kinds of things, software packages, if China insists on their export controls on rare earths and the making of the magnets. So, and China's, you know, I think they made a big mistake because it's not only for the U.S., it's for the whole rest of the world, including Europe. And the Europeans, believe it or not, are pretty angry. So what I heard from Bessent was very tough talk on China and very tough talk on Russian oil companies. And you saw in the paper this morning, they've slapped big sanctions on them. We don't know all the details yet. So, these are aggressive positions. Now it's up to President Trump to negotiate, which he's very good at, as we know. But nonetheless, they're going into this with very tough positions.
Larry, I was fascinated to read the history of Rare Earth, that we were dominating in the 90s, and we basically sold it off, let GM sell to a Chinese company, closed up a huge mine over in California, and we just thought we'd buy it from China and didn't see a problem. But we are capable of not only locating, but mining and refining this earth. And I talked to Doug Burgum last week, and he believes that we might be back on our feet and not so dependent on China within 18 months. You know these people. What's the reality when it comes to rare earth, and which is used for everything, it seems?
Yeah, well, look, I think Doug Burgum is right. The whole issue with that is permitting. And the president will give permitting, you know, make it easier. One federal permit will cover all the agencies. This is something I worked on when I was at the NEC in the White House in the first term, and they're just going to go ahead and open the doors. So, look, you've got Alaska, you've got California, you've got Wyoming, Colorado, you've got Minnesota up by Lake Superior, the old Iron Belt. So we can do this. It's funny, you know, you mentioned the 1990s. Remember, everybody thought, oh, let's rush to China and start a business there and tap into, you know, 1.5 billion consumers. Well, it turns out that was an enormous mistake because the Chinese wouldn't let Americans own their own business. The Chinese had the 51% majority on the board. So what did they do? In the ensuing 25 years, they forced technology transfers. Right. You had to put your plans on the table and they would copycat them. That's exactly what happened. In the case of rare earths, we just stopped doing it because we thought this free trade miracle would happen. And the Chinese turned around and basically screwed us. So now we're going to make up for lost time. But, you know, if Burgum told you 18 months, I don't know what the right number is, Brian, but, you know, it'll happen fast. I mean, it's like Operation Warp Speed. It can go very, very fast.
We have to have one like Operation Warp Speed. Argentina's got rare earth. Australia's got rare earth. There's different countries in Africa have rare earth. And the Chinese are trying to stop us from doing it.
And we'll use money. We'll use defense money if we have to. You know, we'll come in and buy at low prices if we have to. We won't let the Chinese get away with what they've been doing. So this is a soluble problem. But in the meantime, there's a lot of trade friction. You can see it in the stock market, which has been fabulous this year. But just in the last, I noticed the last few days before this Asian trip, there's some jitters in the stock market.
So let's talk about what you talked about with Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, yesterday, and that's additional sanctions on Russia, Rosneft and Lukoil, 40% and 15% respectively. But how does that work? Because we're not necessarily buying oil from them. We go into it goes into a world market. But now when that goes into the world market, there's going to be tariffs on it?
Well, that I don't know the details. They haven't published the details. It could be that countries that do business with Rosneft, let's say take Rosneft or Lukoil, it could be that if foreign countries do business, we will tariff those countries. All right, that's a secondary tariff. Now, I asked Scott Bessent about that, and he didn't want to let the details out yesterday. And I noticed in the paper this morning, and I read the Treasury circular, it's not very clear yet. We could also have secondary sanctions on them and keep transactions off of this international SWIFT payment wire, okay, and even prevent payments through the New York Fed wire here in town for any transactions that are done by other countries. In other words, if China wants to keep buying Russian oil, India says they won't, all right, but if they do, we could prevent them from doing business here.
Right.
The same with Europe, but I don't know that yet. Depends how they're enforced. That's the key point. These are tough-sounding sanctions, but the actual transactions, we'll have to see how they're handled. I mean, Europe has, 19 rounds of sanctions on Russia. All right, this would be the 20th if they come along with it. Europe has not yet put sanctions on those two oil companies. Has it worked? I don't really think it has worked. And, of course, through the dark markets and by turning off transponders on oil ships and things of that sort, and using oil brokers that nobody ever heard of from third world countries. There are a lot of ways to get around this. So the key is the enforcement mechanism.
Absolutely. Larry Kudlow, our guest. Larry, here's what Kevin, I was talking to somebody in the clothing business, very successful, and they said since they make some of their clothing in China and a lot in Vietnam, the tariffs are really going to kill them. And in January, they're going to have to ratchet up their prices because they're losing millions of dollars with the tariffs. So I said, what about bringing manufacturing back here? He said, we don't know how to do it. It's like you need a level of skill. It's not just the level, not only is labor cheaper, they're skilled. Here's what Kevin O'Leary said about manufacturing.
Think about, it's like a chess game. It's you move a piece this way and then you move it that way and they come back. Nobody's checkmating anybody because we all need each other. But a reciprocal sort of 10 to 15% worldwide, that can work with the covenant that I mentioned earlier. Don't tax yourself on stuff you don't have. You know, if you don't have a commodity, don't do that to yourself. And that's what we have to kind of figure out. Which are the, maybe aluminum, for example. And no, you can't redomesticate manufacturing in 3 years. It takes 15 years. So it's the beginning of something.
What are your thoughts about that? Because manufacturing would come back differently. We're talking about robots now, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have a lot of advanced technologies, robots being one of them, all the AI, quantum computing stuff that, you know, we talk about. We're giving, for a new factory, we're giving 100% immediate expensing over a, I guess, four-year period, which is a big inducement, a big incentive to build a factory. I mean, Donald Trump loves factories, Brian. If you want to understand the big chunk of his trade policy, you know, yes, he wants a level playing field, and he wants foreign barriers to come down. But he loves factories. He wants to build factories. And I think there's going to be enormous push here. And we're in better shape than we think. I mean, look, these tariffs have not hurt us yet. There's no evidence that there's been any big tariff inflation. In fact, right now, I would argue in the commodity markets, there's more deflation than there is inflation. So the tax incentives that we put in one big, beautiful bill are very promising. I mean, it's an enormous, almost overlooked part of that bill. If you buy machinery and equipment, Brian, you get an immediate write-off, okay? You don't have to wait a year or two. You don't have to wait 15 years the way it was suggested before. You get it right away. That's a tremendous inducement to go out. And, in fact, there's a CapEx boom going on right now in factories and companies across the country. So, you know, I just looked last night. I was looking. The Atlanta Fed GDP now, you know, they track the economy, was 3.8 in the second quarter. They're looking for 3.9% in the third quarter. We're growing at almost 4%.
It's crazy.
You know, yeah. There's nobody except Kudlow and Laffer expected us to grow at that kind of rate. And we could keep this up. Besson and I talked about this last night on the show. We could grow at a 4% pace with all these tax cuts. By the way, January 1st, when the IRS withholding rates are changed, $200 billion of tax savings are going to flow in to middle-class workers on overtime and tips and so
forth. Larry, we're going to have to continue this conversation in the elevator or in your office because I'm up against a heartbreak. You know radio, so you know you can't take it personal. But we could go on forever. I just nonstop learning with Larry Kudlow. We're going to see your show at 4 o'clock today, Larry. Thanks so much.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I tell you, this thing is going to be huge. I mentioned 29 arrested in and around gambling in the NBA. Including Chauncey Billups and Terry Rozier. It turns out there's also the mob. They named four Italian crime families, the Gambinos crime families involved in this. They talked about a sophisticated card game with contact lenses that can x-ray see-through cards. I mean, this stuff sounds crazy, like Ocean's 11 or Ocean's 12, whatever they're up to. It's unfathomable to me. To me, this is getting scary. I remember, to a degree, the 1980 scandal with old cocaine use in the NBA. And that was something they had to totally rebuild the league. I just hope for the league's sake, this doesn't get pervasive through all these teams, through all these dicey figures and underworld characters, because that's the sanctity of results that have already been done and might still be played. If you think something's rigged, you're not going to buy a ticket to watch.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Even like what happened to poor Charlie Kirk and that. And now why you can't allow people to grieve and now use that an opportunity to criticize or to turn it into something. It's like that's just basic humanity there. And like we are forgetting, we're forgetting that we need each other. We need each other here. And now I refuse to be a part of it and comparing people to Hitler and those things, because if that's what's required to win, then I refuse to.
So Senator Fetterman talked about a primary challenge. He's got a book out, talked about being pro-Israel, pro-border, a strong border, and not for the lockout, and saying that's why I'm voting to start up the government again. But he is concerned about health care, but he doesn't want to shut the government down to do it. That was the old stance of Senator Schumer. But not anymore. They've seemed to feel as though this is the way to go. Although some of the people speaking out for them among leadership are not doing him any favors. Senator Schumer himself last week coming out and saying, the longer this goes, the better we look. Really? The more we're winning. Fantastic. Do you really feel like people living paycheck to paycheck who are working and not getting a paycheck feel like you're winning the longer it lasts? Are you crazy? Let's bring in Josh Krashauer, Fox News Radio political analyst and editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh, who's winning the lockout?
I would say no one's winning. Politically speaking, this lockout is on track to set the record for longest government lockout. And frankly, when you look at the polls, I don't think there's any political pressure on either side to make any compromises or concessions. It seems like I wouldn't call it winning, but normally, both sides would be taking political heat. You'd be seeing both sides taking a lot of pressure because of the perception that services were being shut down, that government wasn't able to operate as normal. And if you look at the polling, the perception is that nothing's really changed a whole lot. And frankly, the Amazon blackout yesterday probably had a bigger impact on Americans than the government shutdown has over the last few weeks. So that's part of the problem is I don't think a lot of Americans are really – I mean, like, that's part of the argument that conservatives have made for quite some time, that government is bloated, that it's not – there's a lot of stuff there that's not essential, and we're finding out that they're – so far, so there hasn't been sort of the nightmare scenario that people have raised when it comes to the impact of a government shutdown.
Congresswoman Catherine Clark, she's the whip on the left. Listen to what she just says. Listen to the words talking about the lockout. Cut 45.
You don't think that the public will perceive that the Democrats are responsible?
I mean, shutdowns are terrible. And of course, there will be families that are going to suffer. We take that responsibility very seriously. But it is one of the few leverage times we have. It is an inflection point.
Really? So it's about leverage? Is this a spokesperson for the shutdown?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Democratic argument all along, which is that they're doing this to increase the healthcare subsidies, entitlements, that's pretty thin rule. And typically, we've talked about this before, Brian, that the party that actually initiates the shutdown, the Democratic Party, they usually historically suffer outsized blame. I think there's something about the Democratic argument that is reminiscent of Seinfeld. It's sort of a shutdown about nothing. Like, well, what are you really – the argument that Democrats have been making that trying to secure health care benefits is really falling on deaf ears in the mainstream press and among even some of their own supporters. So, again, like I'm actually a little surprised there hasn't been a whole lot of outside political pressure to really – get this thing done for Democrats to come to the table, to get government back open, maybe some compromise. Usually it entails some compromises on both sides and past government shutdowns. But there's just not a lot of public angst about this government shutdown, which is why it's going as long as it has, and why I think it's going to last well beyond the 2019 shutdown, which was until now was the longest shutdown in American history.
So, Josh, a few things. When they say healthcare, Hakeem Jeffries yesterday said that our healthcare system is broken. Okay, who came up with the healthcare system? It was Barack Obama. Obamacare, solely Democratic votes. So what they're saying is because Republicans don't want to subsidize at pandemic levels, they broke the healthcare system. In other words, this thing has to constantly go onto a respirator. And the one time they say, listen, I'm tired of putting it on a respirator. If it can't exist on its own, it should die. And regardless of the shutdown, rates were going up again, right?
Right. I mean, that, the key point you made about at pandemic levels, I mean, that's the key. And that's the argument that Republicans and Speaker Johnson have made, that there were increased spending levels during the pandemic in an emergency situation. And they're kind of bringing it back to the more typical levels. I think, you know, my rule of thumb in politics is unless people actually feel an impact, unless they actually see their premiums shooting up or they lose health insurance or there's something that directly affects most Americans, it's not going to have an outsized political impact. And right now, maybe there is this long-term impact that people won't be able to have the same degree of access to health care as a result of some of the changes. But they're not seeing it now, and that means there's not as much political pressure but I think if the Democrats, at a certain point, because Democrats are using this as leverage to shut down the government, they are getting. I think there are a lot of people in the country that are saying, "Well, what are you doing? What is this all about? And why are you still keeping the government closed?"
It reminds me a little like Ukraine, only it's no violence. They say Russia goes and takes parts of Ukraine, about 18 to 20% of Ukraine, and says, "Okay, we'll compromise. We'll give you some of your own land back." Really? So we're just go through the appropriations process and do your fighting in a normal way. And by the way, both sides are terrible at that. The way I understand it, there's 11.7 million people on Obamacare. Now, most of those payments were going up at the end of this year. I get it. Now, what we should understand, too, is that Obamacare is not working. So at one point, we're going to have to visit because everyone can relate to health care. But we can't relate to keep writing subsidized checks. It doesn't help make doctors feel good. The medical profession isn't thriving. And then people aren't getting the access that they need. So this current situation, they want to make it about healthcare. I'm wondering if they could possibly sit in a room and understand that what they're doing now is not working. What I'm struck by is in 2013, we found this clip of Ted Cruz. And this was his prediction after Obamacare passed. Cut 47.
According to Avik Roy, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and writer for Forbes.com, quote, if you compare the cheapest plan on healthcare.gov to the cheapest, quote, bronze plan on the new Covered California Insurance Exchange, premiums for healthy 25-year-olds will increase by 147%. A median of $183 on the exchange versus $74 today. And premiums for healthy 40-year-olds will increase by 149%. A median of $234 on the exchange versus $94 today.
So everything happened like he said and was predicted. But people say, well, you just don't like President Obama or you want, you just don't want Obamacare. And the Republicans never stopped trying to repeal it. But now we're living with it. And he predicted it.
Yeah, look, I think that's basic economics 101, healthcare economics, which can be complicated because the whole Obamacare scheme was dependent on, you know, the individual market can only kind of be supported with a critical mass of people and government subsidies. So that was the whole debate over Obamacare and the challenges with it in the first place. You do need to have, you know, that large enough pool of demand to make the market even, you know, to work. I think that Cruz nailed the economic analysis. Well, the problem is once you get benefits, and we know this, you know, for throughout history, when you give someone an entitlement, when you give someone a benefit, it's hard to take it away. So, I mean, what the Democrats are betting, and they've had a historical edge on the political argument over health care just because they're the party that wants to give away more government benefits, more government entitlements vis-a-vis health care. So it's been, I mean, we saw this in the Obamacare fight. during Trump's first term that ultimately he was unable to repeal Obamacare and repeal the program, just because once people had it, even if the reforms were going to be making the program more effective, or would be beneficial for in terms of waste, fraud, and abuse, it was hard to pull that away. So that's kind of what we're seeing now, except we're talking about a much smaller pool. We're just talking about subsidies for the program, not the entire program.
All right, just real quick on the White House renovations. Everything is controversial. Nothing can be done. So the president wants to put a ballroom on. He has to take out most of the East Room. The media has gone crazy. Cut 49.
Donald Trump wants to be a king. It's the best explanation for everything he's been doing just in recent days. Just look at what he's doing right now to the White House.
It does, to me, when I look at it quickly, look like a Kim Jong-un propaganda video, right? Of, when he does the nukes on Washington, whatever it might be. Yeah. There's something disturbing about it.
This unprecedented moment is an apt metaphor. Trump's demolishing the White House as he also demolishes our country's constitutional norms and rule of law.
A perfect metaphor for how President Trump was trying to just bulldoze his political foes.
I tell you what I don't care about. I don't care about that damn ballroom.
Exactly.
I'll tell you that.
Right. So he wants to put a ballroom in the White House. He compared it to what Truman did, FDR did, what Barack Obama basketball court, the covering up the pool. All these things that have happened in the past. They gutted the whole place under Truman. There was nothing left except the studs. So your thoughts about adding the ballroom using private funds?
Well, look, I was watching President Trump's press conference with NATO head of NATO yesterday, and he clearly has been paying very, very focused on this, and even had mock-ups of some of the new design of the proposed ballroom and the changes, and he was making the case about how this was being paid for by private money, and he really clearly has been paying a lot of attention to this, and you could see that when he was speaking about it yesterday when the president was going into great detail. Look, I think this is a question of this came as a surprise to me. We, covering the White House, it had been mentioned before that there were going to be some extensions and proposing this new ballroom, but the degree to which, the degree of the size of the extension and both the elimination of the east wing of the White House wasn't really talked about, wasn't proposed to Congress, wasn't really debated through Congress or the media. So it caught a lot of people by surprise, and I think that's not great politics. You kind of want to get your allies and get your supporters in line, because this came as a surprise to a whole lot of people. There was a poll out by YouGov out yesterday, a Snap poll, only showed about 20 or so percent supported the decision. So, I think people are still kind of digesting the news and what it all means. But I think there's a little bit of political handholding that the White House is going to have to do, and a little more explaining to talk about this project.
Yeah, he does. He'll explain it, but it is an improvement. And the ballroom, the first phase of construction oftentimes is destruction. And as people start building it up, are they going to feel differently? And President Trump has had no success trying to convince any Democrat that anything he does is somewhat palatable or normal outside Senator Fetterman. So he's probably thinking to himself, I don't really need permission without needing funds. In fact, that is one of the quotes from Rebecca Miller, which is a nonprofit that ever advocates for protecting historic sites in Washington. She said she had to explain the White House. She said, our hands are tied. It's frustrating that there is nothing that the organization can do from a legal or advocacy perspective. So Trump knew it, and he's going to build it, and I think we're all benefit from it. I think David Axelrod came out and said Trump, the businessman, offered to build it once. He said, I wish I would have taken him up on it.
This reminds me of the New York City real estate Trump and the deal making. I mean, it's very reminiscent watching him yesterday. He's on his game on the issues of development and construction. I just think there needs to be kind of a little more transparency. And I think, and a debate about how big should that be. NIMBY, the whole not in my backyard, that's a very powerful impulse. This is sort of NIMBY in the nation's capital on steroids. So that's what I think Trump and the White House need to be attuned to on the politics.
But be different if he was a plumber for a living, or this is what he does all the time. Built. Josh, lastly, on this scandal, 29 people we think are indicted, some big names like Chauncey Billups, as well as Terry Rozier of the Miami Heat involved. And the others are different type of schemes. All the mafia families, the big five mafia families are involved. A complex card scheme using high technology. The press conference just wrapped up. Man, the scope of this caught everybody by surprise, and the details are still coming out. What do you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really big deal. The gambling has exploded with the legalization of gambling and the ubiquitousness of online gambling. You almost expected a scandal like this to happen in one of the big sports leagues. And the fact that you had a player that apparently was, people were in the know that he was sitting out or going to play limited minutes, and there were a lot of prop bets about the amount of time or the amount of points, I guess, he was going to score. I mean, it sinks to high heaven, and we know this from history. The Black Sox scandal over a century ago, like, that can ruin a sports league. It can ruin the reputation of sports in general. And the NBA, I think, has been the most exposed with all the load management and a lot of embrace of gambling by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. That I think it's a big mistake. I think he's reaping what he sowed, and it's going to be a big problem for the league.
Two things I knew were going to be a problem: pot, legalizing pot, and legalizing gambling. I'm not saying, people can do it. I'm not going to judge you. You compare it to drinking. Yes, people are going to bet in Las Vegas and Atlantic City. Why not the whole country? Why? Because it's so prevalent and so normalized that everybody's doing it. And the people don't understand the downside. And as usual, the human beings say, what if I knew how it would come? What if I could get to a player? What if I could put some money down and really win? And this is what's going to be unfolding over the next few days. High technology, X-ray contact lenses, seeing through cards. If you imagine if you put all that technology into something good and energy and go on Shark Tank the normal way in capitalism.
You hit the nail on the head, Brian. And look, there needs to be a red line between the leagues and their staffs and their gambling. That's what did, baseball in 1919. It's the NBA's had a lot of issues, and this is really, really bad based on the indictment.
Josh, I never thought we'd talk about sports gambling in this, especially with so many big issues in politics. But thanks so much for calling the audible. Josh, appreciate it. Josh Crash Hour, back in a moment.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What? But I have a lot of friends that have daughters that play soccer, play volleyball, run track, play softball. You know what their parents don't want them doing for good reason is competing with males. What you're doing, you understand what you're doing to try to do some kind of cheap political point with a bunch of left-wing zombies is you're ruining the women that work their off.
James Carville, 100% right. He's cursing, I know, and we had to bleep him out. But you know what he's saying? Trans men can't be in women's sports. And now a huge setback on the international powerlifting. They're letting a man compete as a woman. And they're doing the same thing in Minnesota. They say it's discrimination. Good luck, guys. You have James Carville, who will do anything to get a Democrat elected, predicted these big wins. Can't believe how stupid these Democrats are and these left-wing lunatics like Governor Walz in Minnesota, which I hope the people of Minnesota sooner or later demand more, because he is absolutely a national embarrassment and a disgrace. And now they're still doing it. You imagine go working all your life playing volleyball and basketball and to any level, Division I, and then you go pro or Olympics and you got to deal with a guy going to who thinks he's a guy that thinks he's a girl, and then you got to compete against him. Whatever you're going through, gender confusion, don't ruin sports and don't traumatize people in locker rooms. How hard is that to get across? And for James Carville to lose it like this, you heard him. It's crazy. Don't forget, I want to see you November 1st in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. You can drive there. I know where you live. BrianKilmeade.com. It's going to be streamed on Fox Nation, but History, Liberty, and Laughs begins at 5 p.m. You can still have your Saturday night, and you can feel patriotic, motivated, and inspired. You'll love it. Brian Kilmeade.
Top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, I'm Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. We are coming your way this hour. with Nate Morris, former GOP nomination for the Senate in the Kentucky to replace Mitch McConnell. He's going to be out there running against Attorney General Daniel Cameron, as well as Andy Barr, who was on last week. It's a coveted position. Republicans favored to win, but it's not going to be a layup. Cameron had Donald Trump's endorsement last time, but he lost. And Trump seems open to Andy Barr. And we'll see about Nate Morris. And Charles Casparino is standing by. I want to get him on last night's debate, what it means to New York and the country. And we're also following this betting scandal. And if you are hearing this for the first time, don't blame yourself. It's just been announced, a sprawling press conference that lasted 45 minutes. There wasn't one word that was repeated. It was stunning. 29 defendants, two criminal schemes, involves mostly NBA players, Chauncey Billups, coach of Trailblazers, Hall of Famer, former finals MVP. Now, as I mentioned, he's with a different scheme. One was point shaving and prop bets with Terry Rozier, and the other was a card game. We're using sophisticated technology to rig card games involving, I think, four major, they use this term, not me, Italian crime families. We used to call them mobsters, crime families. And the details are just pouring in. And I'm doing the show at the same time, so I'm jotting as much down as possible. Damon Jones also involved. He's been in, he's the only one involved in the card scheme as well as the betting scheme. So we'll follow all that, but let's get to our big three.
Number three.
We canceled the meeting with President Putin. It didn't feel right to me. It didn't feel like we were going to get to the place we have to get, so I canceled it. But we'll do it in the future.
Yeah, I'm glad, Mr. President, you're not going to Hungary to waste your time because the Russians aren't serious. Ukraine and Venezuela dominate the president's foreign policy. We examine the risk and the reward.
Number two.
Nazis, they're abducting people from their homes and their schools and their jobs, and they know what they're doing is wrong, and they don't give a because they're heartless monsters.
Those are ICE protesters in New York City. Get this, ICE under attack. We expect Chicago and Portland, but now New York. You know what they did? They stopped nine illegal aliens from selling stolen stuff on Canal Street, and New York comes out not in support of law enforcement, but in support of the criminals.
Number one.
What you have is the federal government looking to brutalize street vendors in New York City as a means by which to intimidate New Yorkers.
That is Zohran Mamdani in New York City going after ICE and saying that he is going to bat for illegal alien street vendors and against the local shop owners that called the cops. Major mayoral debate last night. Mamdani sweated it out. He's probably still sweating wherever he is, but did Cuomo and Sliwa do enough to stop him? Mr. New York, Mr. Everything, Mr. Economics, Mr. Intrepid Reporter, Fox Business Senior Correspondent, New York Post columnist, author of Go Woke, Go Broke, Charles Casparino, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm not going to touch the betting scandal. I mean, it's still unfolding in front of us, but I do want to touch.
By the way, Italians?
Yeah, they were Italian mobsters, they were saying.
These are mobsters with vowels at the end of their name. They're not from Italy. I don't get the, you know, the Italian moniker, but...
Because we're Italian, you and I. I'm half Irish, half Italian.
You know, so why do they have to say Italians? And would they say a bunch of blacks gambling, you know, a black gambling syndicate?
I hear you, Charles, but let's talk about something else we do know. Last night, it was the real last chance for Cuomo to knock out Mamdani, and Sliwa getting pressure to drop out. He won't. We know after the debate, he went and sat with Eric Adams at the Knick game, but he didn't get Adams' endorsement. He's got to close the gap somehow. One-on-one, a couple of polls show him within three. Do you think he did enough last night?
Listen, what do I know? I call people who follow this stuff. You know, there's a lot of Wall Street guys who every Wall Street firm has a government relations arm, like a lobbyist arm that deals with politics. I call people at those places, and they don't think it was whatever Andrew did to Mamdani or Mamdani did to himself, exposing his, you know, stupidity and lack of experience, which he obviously did. The general consensus is it's not enough to close a 10-point gap with Curtis still in there. I mean, Eric Adams, I mean, by the way, someone just sent me a text that said he's endorsing Cuomo. I mean, that may or may not happen. I mean, he all but endorsed him by dropping out and shaking his hand. I don't think Eric Adams matters that much.
given his own sort of problems while in office. He's not a very popular mayor, as you know. He's done some good stuff with crime because he has a decent crime commissioner, a police commissioner. But, you know, just the rest of the city is not doing that great. Actually doing horribly when you really come down to it. The ruling Democratic Party in this state has done horribly. Andrew Cuomo was part of that. As much as you want Mondami not to win, think of the alternative. First off, Slee was not going to win. And if you really think Andrew Cuomo is the answer, just follow his last couple of years in office as governor. He raised taxes. He instituted what's known as bail reform, which is essentially a form of defunding the police that allows criminals to walk the streets. And, you know, on an economic standpoint, you know, you raise taxes, and he blocked fracking in upstate New York. He is now, I know as mayor, you don't really care so much about fracking, but the bigger point I'm making is, he did, but he doesn't. It's not his job as mayor, you know, to institute fracking in upstate New York. But it's a tell. The tell is that he gave in to the left of his party way too much, and you know, and then he oddly went soft on Mondami until recently. He just didn't make the case. I firmly believe the sex harassment stuff against him is baloney, because I've done a lot of reporting on it. The nursing home death stuff against him is unfair. I know a lot about that. My brother's the chairman of medicine at Brooklyn Hospital. I know exactly what went down and how the hospitals demanded that nursing home patients be sent back once they were quote unquote cleared of COVID. So you just can't blame Cuomo for that.
Yeah, I don't. Janice Dean feels differently. We'll spar at you a different time.
She does, but literally, my brother was in the room. He runs Brooklyn Hospital. He runs an ICU unit. The New York Times has done numerous stories about him and his team saving lives during COVID. I could show you these. And I asked him, you know, tell me about this. And he said, it's unfair. Okay, let's leave it there. Where Cuomo can be rightly criticized, and which he should have done a mea culpa on, is how left he took the state.
And don't forget the nuclear power plant shut down. And look at our utility rates. Come through New York.
Little personal history. My dad worked on that nuclear power plant. He was an iron worker. That's at Indian Point. It's where I grew up, right outside there. I remember the Geiger counter readers used to come in the mail. And trust me, we all lived there. We swam in lakes near there. You know, none of us are dying of nuclear exposure. And he still shut it down. I get it. He needed mea culpas on that and a new way forward, like a reform agenda. And he never articulated it until maybe a little bit now. But it's too late. When's the election? It's next week, right? 2 weeks?
Yeah, November 6th, November 4th on Tuesday. But listen, one quote from the business world. Drew McKnight, co-CEO of the Fortress Investment Group on Mondami's rent control plan. He goes, I wince at whether these policies are likely to be effective. The way you make housing more affordable, which he is running on, is that you make it easier to build, easier to permit. That's the total opposite of what Mondami is proposing. None of his proposals make any sense. Go ahead.
Think about this. He's doubling down on the crappy system we have now, which is rent control, and rent stabilization, which makes it hard for people to build middle-class housing. The same type of housing that Donald Trump's father got very rich on, you know, built middle-class home, you know, housing and apartments throughout Queens and Brooklyn, and I believe Staten Island back in the day. That sort of stuff doesn't really happen right now because of the rent regulations. Those regulations have been in place for years and supported by the ruling Democratic elite of this state. And, you know, Andrew Cuomo was part of that. So in comes Mondami, and he's saying, listen, I'm going to fix this by doubling, tripling down on it. Okay? That's all he's really doing. And yes, it's going to make it a lot worse, and, you know, this city will get less affordable because people are not going to build with that much government intrusion. But remember, Mondami is a symptom of a bigger disease. That bigger disease is that this city and this state, and I've covered this for years, has been lurching leftward, socialist, for many years now.
And don't you think part of it, Charles, is because people are leaving because it's lurching? And people go, screw that, I'm out. So it makes it worse.
And guess what? The alleged adults in the room, the Chuck Schumers, the Hakeem Jeffries, the Andrew Cuomos, allowed it to happen. They did not fight that.
And now they're catatonic. They won't even endorse or non-endorse. They just sit there and watch the train wreck.
They don't know what to do. And, you know, they part of them is because they're careerists, right? So politicians. So they try to appease the left, get leftward votes. You know, Chuck Schumer is so obsessed with AOC. Just think about it. Someone as harebrained as AOC, who, by the way, went to the same high school I went to in Yorktown Heights. Yeah. We lived probably in the same neighborhood or near the same neighborhoods when we were kids in the Bronx, And, you know, she has got this titan of the Democratic Party, Chuck Schumer, shaking in his shoes because she espouses stupid socialist solutions.
I don't even think he's running again, Charles. There's an excellent chance at 76 he's done anyway. But I want you to hear people at home that missed the debate or don't get Spectrum TV. Cut three is Mondami talking about housing.
What we need to do is ensure that next year is not the same. And we are going to do that by building the housing necessary such that New Yorkers are not priced out of this city or forced to live in shelters. And that's why my campaign is going to deliver 200,000 new affordable homes across the five boroughs, all while freezing the rent for more than 2 million rent-stabilized tenants.
I thought Chris Angel was a brilliant magician out in Vegas, but how is this guy going to do that?
Well, I mean, listen, I don't know, make a rap. I mean, what was his last job? He was a rap. Before he got into politics, he was a rapper. I mean, he obviously is an articulate guy. He's a good-looking guy, looks good on TV. He's got his lines down. But the reality is, if he's telling us that he's going to unleash free markets and get rid of all these rent regulations and all these zoning regulations that prevent people from building housing and fitting a need. There's a need for middle-class housing. There's no doubt about that. So there should be someone, entrepreneur, to come in and do it. I'm all for it. But that's not what he's saying. He's saying government is going to mandate.
It's crazy.
It's going to freeze. It's going to tell builders what to do. It's going to raise taxes to do that. That's what he's saying. And all, right. You know what's going to happen? More people are going to leave. Why do I have to live in New York City?
I don't know. Charles, we got to talk about this, you and I, personally, in the hallway. But this is how smart you are. We have now confirmed another one of your stories.
I mean, we have to travel into the city sometimes to do our job.
Pay our taxes and yet not vote.
But we could move to Connecticut and commute in and get and escape the city taxes that he's going to impose. It's very easy.
I know. By the way, Ned Lamont does not endorse him. By the way, I think I give him credit, the governor of Connecticut. Garrick Adams, this just in. Mayor Garrick Adams said today he will endorse Governor Andrew Cuomo. Remember, they met last night at the Knick game or sat next to each other. That is, Adams says the decision is a stunning reversal. Remember how many bad things he said about Cuomo. He was very mad at Cuomo, but he'd rather have Cuomo than Mondami. So.
Yeah. And by the way, this was in the cards for weeks, you know, since he dropped out. He said he was going to do it. He was privately saying he was going to do it.
Charles, I only got a minute left, but you had a great story about skewing the crime stats to make people feel as though crime is going down in these major cities. What have you found out?
I mean, exactly that. I mean, here's the thing, and I got this from Justice Department people. People in the Trump Justice Department are crunching these type of numbers, trying to figure out a way to dramatize this because it's so real and it's so horrible. What liberal prosecutors have done, and you can, and by the way, that's why you hear J.B. Pritzker, you know, lefty governor of Illinois. You hear that moron with the slick hair, that Gavin Newsom, say the same thing, that in their cities, crime has gone down. And one reason why crime has gone down is because prosecutors are busting down felonies to misdemeanors with abandon.
Yes.
And even violent felonies. And you could see it. Remember, have you seen the recent issue with the sword-wielding maniac who stomped the guy's head? You know, that guy just in July got caught for assault, a violent assault, and they busted it down to a misdemeanor.
It's unbelievable. And then he said crime's going down, but we know better and we feel differently. If you ask the people, we know it's not going down.
And by the way, and you know who they bust for felonies? Daniel Penny.
Yeah. And by the way, and guess who jumped on that? Alvin Bragg. And guess what originally was against it is Eric Adams, and he sobered up quickly.
I'm just saying, this is a dysfunctional city. Yeah. It is offering people that pay taxes, that go to work, that try to do the right thing, raise families, almost no reason to live here.
Yep.
And you put a commie in there, it's probably the last straw that for anybody that can leave will leave. Going on here, Brian, the last point I'll make, look at the out-migration. We've had an out-migration of taxpayers, of working-class and middle-class people and rich people have left New York. We've had an immigration of migrants and immigrants who, quite frankly, are coming to this country to feast off the welfare state. I'm not saying they're all a bunch of freeloaders. They work hard. But one reason why they come here from Venezuela, from Nicaragua, from Mexico, is because the welfare state will take care of them.
I hear you. Charles, I understand that, and that's the debate the Trump administration is trying to change, and this huge pushback among Democrats who are now look at ICE as the bad guys instead of doing the work they should be doing. It's unbelievable. Charles Gasparino, you're the best. Read his columns in the New York Post. Watch him all over Fox Business and Fox News. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We will not allow this kind of illicit activity to happen, not only at the national sporting level, but also where it hides in La Casa Nostra. And when these two collided together, they perpetrated a fraud that is historic in terms of not just money, but the scheme and the deceit that they utilize to steal and swindle people from money, to include crypto fraud. This is an operation that showcases to you that under President Trump's administration, there is no room for any type of criminal behavior, be it on the world's largest stage or in the back rooms of tiny parlors where guard cams are being plugged.
So you got 38 states that legalized gambling. You knew there was going to be problems, at least I know. Now the huge scandal has been unearthed. 31 charged by the FBI involving Chauncey Billups, coach of the Trailblazers and Hall of Famer, and Terry Rozier, who was playing for the Miami Heat. Both were arrested today. Crime families involved, point shaving, card games, x-ray vision, high-tech stuff. It's unbelievable what's taking place, and I think it's only the beginning. Back in a moment.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
If you call the president or someone like a fascist, you're effectively calling the people that are going to vote for him, and then they must be fascist too, or they support fascism and those things. And that's just not true. That's just not it. I happen to know, and I love a lot of people that voted for the president, and they're not fascists, they're not Nazis, they're not trying to destroy the Constitution and all those things. They just happen to have a different priorities, and they love our country in the same ways that Democrats do as well. So I refuse to do those kinds of a thing, because that kind of extreme kinds of rhetoric makes it easier for those kinds of extreme kinds of actions.
That is Senator John Fetterman on with Sean Hannity. He's got a book out, and he's pretty much a voice of reason in the Senate, kind of like Bill Maher on the left, where he's calling it as he sees it, as opposed to where the party wants him to. He says there should not be a shutdown. The Democratic Party has let down Israel. We should have enforced the border, and it's right to pick up illegal immigrants. And that is going to get him primaried, and he doesn't care. For a guy that wears a hoodie into the Senate, it doesn't surprise you that he doesn't care what people think. But is that the future? After all, Joe Manchin got so fed up, he used to do the same thing. He left. Kyrsten Sinema called it a career, left the party. They both ended up doing it. What is the future of the Senate as we experience day 20-plus of a lockout. With me right now is somebody that wants to get there. First, he wants to get the Republican nomination and replace Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. He is Nate Morris. He's in studio, if you're watching on the stream, and joins us now. Nate, great to see you. Your thoughts about John Fetterman's philosophy and statements there?
Well, I think it's terrific that we have folks that are standing up for common sense. We know that we've got to have a border. And on top of having a border, we've got to make sure every illegal goes back where they came from. And I think that this Schumer shutdown is another example that career politicians and the people that are there in Washington opposing the president and his agenda, they need to get with the program and they need to come to the table and get this solved once and for all. I mean, this is about giving illegal immigrants benefits. I mean, this is what this whole shutdown boils down to, and the president's standing strong. And I think we need people that understand common sense and understand how to get deals done. And I'm confident that the president's going to continue to stand strong, and his judgment about this, I think he's doing the right thing.
I want you to hear, if you want to find out, both sides are going to get blamed or given credit, whatever it is. They want to give the Democrats to the extreme left credit for standing up and fighting. And most people say, wait a second, a continuing resolution is to fund Joe Biden levels, but this is Joe Biden's budget. But they say, well, this is our only chance to fix health care. Well, health care is Obamacare. Who passed that? That was all Democrats. And now you need money to save it again. And it's the pandemic level of spending, which were never meant to continue past the pandemic.
Well, I think, look, we're in a situation where I think the president has continued to stand strong. We know that immigration is at the heart of our challenges right now as a country. I mean, look, Brian, look what's going on here in New York with this mayoral race.
Right.
I mean, this is all about immigration. People don't want to say what this race is about. Elections are about demographics. And we see the foreign-born demographics that are going to elect potentially this guy here in New York. And this is through unfettered immigration that's coming to our country that we haven't had a strong border. And we're having illegals vote here in New York. And this is a preview from what we're going to see around the United States. If we don't get really tough, we don't deport these folks, we don't continue to have a strong border. And this is what the president's fighting for. And I think this is the heart of the shutdown.
And I want to hear this. This is Congresswoman Catherine Clark. She's a Democratic whip in the House. 45.
You don't think that the public will perceive that the Democrats are responsible?
I mean, shutdowns are terrible. And of course, there will be, you know, families that are going to suffer. We take that responsibility very seriously. But it is one of the few leveraged times we have. It is an inflection point.
Do you believe this? People are not getting paychecks who live paycheck to paycheck. And she says, well, it's leverage. What do you want me to do?
Well, that's classic Democrats. I mean, they're holding people hostage. They're trying to extort the president. They're trying to extort the country to continue to pass this nonsense and to continue to put this in our government. And again, I think this is why we've got to have people. They're going to stand up. But they need to come to the table. They need to follow the president, and we need to get a deal done for the country.
So we know that Mitch McConnell is going to retire after he's done with his term. So you got to first get through the primary in Kentucky, which leans right, although you have a Democratic governor. So you're going against Andy Barr, who was here last week, and Daniel Cameron, who was a protege of Mitch McConnell. And he got the endorsement of Donald Trump, but he lost last time for governor. So what makes you different? Tell the American people where you came from.
Well, I'm very proud that I'm a ninth generation Kentuckian. I was raised by a single mom. I grew up in a working class home. I became an entrepreneur, built a very large waste management company, very successful.
How successful?
One of the largest waste management companies in the United States. And wow. Through that journey, I got to know our vice president. We became buddies. And just last year, he encouraged me to take a look at this race. And he said, you know, Nate, we need outsiders. We need people that are not career politicians. Right. We need people that have actually created jobs. And I look at the race and I said, you know, these are two McConnellites. These are two folks that are of the swamp, career politicians. These are people that have never employed anyone outside of government. And we've seen with President Trump that outsiders, people that don't need the job, don't need the money, those are the people that are having the biggest impact on our government and helping to save our country.
Mm-hmm. You know, so Brian, you said if you get in, you go in two terms and you're
two
out.
Two terms.
You look at this as service.
Absolutely. I mean, I share this a lot on the stump. I was like, you know, my two opponents, they're running to continue their career. I'm running to serve. And I think there's a really big difference. And I think career politicians, Brian, as you know, they've run our country off a cliff.
$37 trillion in debt.
Whether it be the debt, whether it be failed foreign policy, bad deals like getting into the Ukraine, whether it be just even standing strong and standing on principle and common sense and with the border. I mean, Brian, under Joe Biden, we were invaded. We were invaded as a country. Nobody says that, but we had over 20 million people come into our country that we know nothing about. And we've got these two guys that have been part of the system, part of the political class, and they did nothing to stop it.
No doubt about it. And now ICE is looked at as the bad guys. You have law enforcement. Remember, he said defund the police. Every Democrat says, well, that wasn't me. That was Cori Bush and the extremists. Okay. When you're going after ICE, you are doing a version of defunding the police or say or making cops look like the bad guys. They're, you're basically called thugs by Governor Pritzker. These are Americans, mostly minority force, kicking out illegal immigrant, most of 70% of which are criminals. And now they're being targeted. And the Democrats are going to launch an app that will tell you where ICE is surging. I don't know how that's even legal. The App Store took down an app that tracked ICE. I don't know why, just because it's coming from Democrats, that they're going to be able to do this. Does that sound legal to you?
It sounds absolutely crazy to me. But remember,
it sounds
Brian,
anti-American to me.
And remember, Brian, there's two groups of people in our country that like illegal immigration. Number one, it's the Democrats. Why did the Democrats want to do this? They want to change electoral politics. They are trying to change the demographics of our country so they can have a permanent blue majority. The other group of people that like illegals are Rhino Republicans who like cheap labor. You know, 19 of my family members worked in an auto plant in Kentucky. You know, the fact that we have people in our own party that are trying to undercut the American worker by employing illegals and helping to illegals get into their companies, it's absolutely disgraceful. So it's really on both fronts.
So how would you handle this? And by the way, speaking to Nate Morris, who's running for the GOP nomination, the hope to be the next senator from Kentucky. Nate, how would you handle this? Farmers are the backbone. A lot has to do with the president's base, right? Most farmers. And they feel as though, I think, a great number, percentage of their workforce across the country are illegal immigrants who have been here a couple of decades. Would you have a different stance with them as you would a man or woman that came over the last 18 months, especially a criminal?
Well, Brian,
should there be a carve-out for them? No citizenship, but maybe allowed to stay if they get a sponsorship?
Brian, absolutely no carve-outs, no special exceptions. If you're illegal, you got to go back. And I think it starts with prioritization. We got to start first and foremost with the criminals. You know, we've got millions and millions.
Worst first.
The absolute worst first. We've got millions and millions of people in our country. And the way we do this from a systematic, practical procedure is we've got to have prioritization and make sure the most violent go back first. And then I think we take a step-by-step process to make sure everybody goes back.
So Charlie, you were the last candidate that Charlie endorsed before he was killed. And no, the America is still not over that. And it's reverberating around the world. But Turning Point is surging, which is fantastic. But I said to him, Charlie, I'm going to talk about immigration, but I'm going to tell you, I don't mind if you disagree. But I do believe if you've been here 2 decades and farmers want to stand up for you and sponsor you, no citizenship, but a chance to stay. And he goes, Brian, I disagree, but let's have that debate. And we debated on our show. So you and I disagree on that.
Yeah.
But I think that you could have a respectful debate on the right on that, because I think the absolute truth will leave a lot of these farmers who have been allowed to keep these people here from other administrations a chance to at least phase in the new E-Verify that would not allow them to be able to pay them. Because also I think then you got to raise up their wages. And if you're going to employ them full time, you got to give them insurance. So I don't know if they'll be as attractive to the farmers if they are underpaying them. I'm not sure they are.
Well, Brian, Charlie and I, we had a terrific relationship. I was so honored. I was the last candidate he endorsed before the tragedy happened. He came to Kentucky to launch my campaign, one of the great honors of my life. But Charlie and I would talk about immigration a lot. And the reason why I am so tough on this issue, and no exceptions, no carve-outs, no special anything.
You got farms in Kentucky.
Well, but Western civilization is on the line here, Brian. I mean, we talk about Western civilization. I mean, look to the UK. And we look across the pond at the UK. They've lost their country. They've lost their country.
France, too.
In about a decade and a half. And it's absolutely crazy that the same kind of thinking that created that mess over there, that's the kind of thinking that's coming here. And look, the situation with this election with Mondami right here in New York, this is going to determine what the Democrats do. And it looks like he's going to win, unfortunately, for our country. But this is all about demographics as well.
My main thing is I'm horrified by the way ICE is being treated in Portland, Chicago, and now New York. And around they're rallying against law enforcement who are rounding up illegal immigrants. Just so people know, even though we're carried by WABC in New York, we're a national show. And street vendors line up on Canal Street with knocked off items, some of them stolen. Most of these were illegal immigrants there selling these. Shop owners are complaining. So ICE moves in, and guess what? Someone tips them off, and New Yorkers, purple hair, nose rings, whatever, come and rally against ICE. And Zohreh Mamdani, who might be the next mayor, has this stance. Listen to this. Cut one.
I think that is a failure on behalf of the federal government. What you have is the federal government looking to brutalize street vendors in New York City as a means by which to intimidate New Yorkers. And we know that rule of law is something that matters very little to Donald Trump.
So you understand what he's saying? By enforcing the law, Donald Trump knows little about the law and brutalized street vendors, illegal immigrants selling knocked off paraphernalia on the street illegally. So I don't know what to say to people like this. This guy's going to be in a very powerful position.
It's absolutely nonsensical, and it's evil because it's anti-American. It's anti-Western civilization, and we're in the fight of our life to keep this country. We're in the fight of our life for Western civilization. Right. Charlie and I talked about this all the time, and we have got to get tough. And we have people in positions of leadership, including the senator I'll be replacing, that voted for amnesty. Right. I mean, you've got someone that I'll be replacing in Kentucky that voted for amnesty throughout his career and could have stopped these illegals from coming, could have sealed the border, didn't do it.
A rapid fire test. Just find out where you stand. Number one, when it comes to Ukraine, the president just put sanctions on two major oil companies inside Russia and gave permission, because American technology is in these German rockets, for them to lose long-range rockets. But so far, not Tomahawks. How do you feel?
Look, I think the president's position on Ukraine has been exactly right. We would have never gotten in this conflict if he'd been president. And I think the president is doing everything he can to make sure that we have as little conflict and as little involvement as possible and to get something done and move on down the road. And I think he's taking the right approach with Ukraine.
You ratchet up pressure on Russia. They can't be trusted.
Look, I think the president has exhibited that from a diplomatic perspective. He might be the greatest diplomat in the history of our country with what he's been able to do in the Middle East. And I think he's going to take the exact same approach with Russia.
If I put you in the room with Bessent and Trump with China next week, what would you make sure to get done?
Well, number one, that we have to know that we're at economic war with China. And we should not give China any leverage, any special exception, any ability to take advantage of the American people. And I think President Trump has called this out over and over again. But we know we're at economic war with China. They've made that abundantly clear. And I think that needs to be the lens by which we communicate and we talk with China.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I believe we have to have a warp speed Manhattan Project-like approach to rare earth, because China is holding that over us, and they have it over us. It's on our cars, in our military equipment, in the iPhone. Do you think that we could do that?
Look, I think we need to win a couple of
these. Mining and refining.
We need to win a lot of these races related to China. Number one, we've got to win the AI race. We've got to win the crypto race against China. And certainly rare earths. This is going to be a future for our infrastructure, for the country, and we got to make sure that we're the leader in this, period.
And it's if we can't do it here, Argentina, Africa, whatever deals we got to cut, right now they really have that, holding that over us head. Nate Morris, final thought, what should people know if they want to support you in Kentucky?
Please come and check out the campaign, natemorris.com. I need your help. Come and be part of this. We are taking on 40 years of incumbency in this race. This is a proxy battle between the MAGA Trump movement and the Mitch McConnell machine that's been in Kentucky for over 40 years. And I think this is going to be a great indicator of the Trump movement and how it's going to continue on for decades to come.
Zach Witkoff and Vivek Ramaswamy are also helping you out there doing a fundraiser.
Yes.
Charlie Kirk, the last one to endorse you. So congratulations, Nate, on getting to this part. I love that somebody is so successful that is doing this as service. I love that mindset. Great to meet you.
Great to be with you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
The first case, Operation Nothing But Bet, exposed a gambling ring built around professional basketball, where players and associates allegedly used inside information to manipulate prop bets on major sports betting platforms. They placed wagers on unders on players to score less, rebound less, assist less, using information that was not yet public. In some instances, players altered their performance or took themselves out of games to make sure that those bets paid out.
So look, that is Jessica Tisch in New York. This case was brought in New York in the Southern District. And I'm talking about a case that has implicated at least 29 people. It's involving the NBA in betting. Two separate scams, at least. One involved cards. I mean, high-tech card scams like you wouldn't believe. Glasses that can see through the back of cards, according to this report. And the very detailed indictment. And the other one's just point shaving and prop bets. For example, I'm not a big bettor, so I don't even pretend. And I don't want to be. But for example, if I'm on the Pelicans and you think you want to bet on how many minutes is the center going to play, you could bet on that. Now, all of a sudden, Rozier has a whole bunch of money betting that he's going to play under 15 minutes. Pelicans against the Hornets. And guess what? He played 10 minutes. The allegation is he told the scammers and the crime families, I'm only playing 10 minutes, put money down. In comes a big influx of money. Well, that tips off the investigators, and that was in 2023, and this announcement was in 2025. This is big.